My name is Kat Mail. I go to University of Michigan Law School, and this is my story called Born Yesterday. Stepping out from the fluorescent lighting of Oaks Correctional Facility and into the orange Michigan autumn outside, I felt righteous. Earlier that day, my professor, my clinic partner, and I had endured 3 hours of driving the flat Midwestern highway to Oaks. As part of the appellate defense clinic, we had conducted an interview with my client, Mr. Peters. He's serving a 40-year sentence for shooting a .38 at a car. But now I knew, after speaking with him, that his conviction was madness. Mr. Peters is innocent. His trial attorney had utterly failed to tell his side of the story. My hands itched to write his appeal. The prison is in a one-street town with one tiny Mexican restaurant, which was our first stop before hitting the long road back to Ann Arbor. My mind was so full of Mr. Peters' story, so full of believing him, that I couldn't even read the menu and picked my lunch at random. Then, our food finally in front of us, I listened in confused silence as my companions began discussing why they thought Mr. Peters was lying. Did you know that the word gullible is not in the dictionary? Of course, it's in the dictionary. Merriam-Webster defines it as easily duped or cheated. I've always been easily duped or cheated. My best friend still often asks me to look under there because she knows I'll respond, under where? Countless times I've looked at the ceiling to see if the word gullible is really written there, and last October I'd spent 4 hours captivated by an inmate's tale, which I was now being told was a fantasy. Listening to my companions convincingly rehash the dubious parts of Mr. Peters' story between bits of rice and beans, I felt like I'd again looked up to see if gullible was written on the ceiling, not even realizing I was outdoors. Secretly, I still thought he was innocent. You should know that I'm terribly indecisive about my career. By the time I graduate, my resume will include substantive work in defense, prosecution, a firm, two judicial internships, one appellate and one trial, and nonprofit consulting. A little while after meeting with Mr. Peters, prosecution caught my eye, and I soon applied to intern at my state attorney general's office and interviewed over Thanksgiving break. My interviewer was a gregarious assistant attorney general, just the sort of southern, proudly conservative person I'd expected, given what I knew about the office. He asks me why, despite my participation in a defense clinic and other off-brand resume items, I was interested in prosecution. I said something noncommittal about enjoying my criminal law class. As he replied, a smile grew on his face. Yeah, and as crim law goes, it's nice to be on the side of the angels. In response, I smiled. I actually believed this shockingly simplistic statement. At least I believed it long enough to interview convincingly, receive an internship offer, and accept it. The whole process of committing myself to the assistant attorney general's ideology took 45 minutes. But driving home from the interview, I began thinking about Mr. Peters and the prosecutors who convicted him. They, too, thought that they were on the side of the angels when they falsely convicted him. That was a story they'd been told and believed. I realized that you'd have to be awfully gullible to believe that. And I'm awfully gullible, so I'd believed it that day for 45 minutes. During that car ride, I suddenly stopped thinking about my gullibility as a simple character flaw and realized it was a complex problem for someone 2 years into law school. Surely gullibility is a weakness in a profession where there are always competing narratives and you have to choose one side to argue for. For someone who believes everything, choosing is an awfully daunting task. I envisioned myself 10 years in the future, a prosecutor, nodding my head approvingly as the defendant tells his story from the stand. Then I thought about myself as a defense attorney, listening to the prosecutor's opening statement about the importance of rule of law, turning to my client and whispering, "You know, he has a point." I spent the late fall in a paralysis of indecision. I had to write Mr. Peters' appeal for the clinic, but I felt contaminated by my brush with the prosecutor's office. My thoughts lacked gravity, hovering between defense and prosecution and dropping out. The due date loomed. My notes from our October jailhouse visit helped. Mr. Peterson in that meeting had revealed his frustration that at trial, his side of the story was not told. There was no competing narrative for the jury to fall for, the gullible ones or the skeptics. I realized that had I been a juror, I would have voted guilty without anywhere else to place my easily won trust. Writing the brief, I tapped into that embarrassing truth. I wrote about the injustice of having only one side of the story told, and I wrote the story I had fallen for back in October. Months have now passed since I submitted the brief. Just last week, I heard from my clinic supervisor. Mr. Peterson read it, and he told her he was really, really pleased. And she said that, whether or not the judge believes his story, it meant a lot to him that someone had believed him and told it his way. I have no clue who my clients are going to be one day, but when they tell me gullible is written on the ceiling, I'll look up without hesitation, and I'm not going to feel bad about it.